Welcome to a MacGuffin Men minisode. This episode is brought to you by nobody, because who the hell would sponsor a minisode? And now, here are Alex and James.
Welcome to MacGuffin Men minisode. I'm Alex, and James is not with me today. He's actually on assignment. I've got Travis here. We're going to talk about Louis. But before we get to that, I just want to get you to check out our website, themacguffinmen.com. Earlier this week, we put out a podcast on the new Rian Johnson movie, Looper. Last week, we put out three separate podcasts, one on The Master and two on Rian Johnson's first two movies, Brick and The Brothers Bloom, and they're all worth checking out, so go ahead and do that. You can also subscribe to us on iTunes, in iTunes search The MacGuffin Men, all one word, follow us on Twitter, at The MacGuffin Men, again, all one word, like us on Facebook, facebook.com/TheMacGuffinMen, and then click the like button that probably has like a thumbs up or something next to it. But yeah, let's just get down to business. Travis, welcome to the podcast.
What's up, Alex and mini-soders, for people that can't stand the length of the regular episodes?
Yeah, we tend to get on people's nerves after.
But after you did your intro, that does make me, like, this has screwed it up for me, because I just want to go back and watch Looper and The Master right now.
Yeah.
I want to go to the theater.
Well, that's another good reason that we're only doing a mini-sode, because you'll be out of here in no time. Now, we're talking about the television show, FX television show, Louis, today. Written, directed, created, sometimes edited by, sometimes music by, basically pretty much everything by Louis C.K. And that's sort of like a big part of the selling point of the movie, or of the show. And you were a fan of the show. You were sort of the first person I knew that was a fan of the show. Yeah. You were very much an early adopter of this thing that's sort of become like this big critical thing. Like, critics love this show.
Fair. I definitely had a bit of my, like, sort of post-Firefly Arrested Development cynicism kick in the first season, that I was like, oh, there's no way this can last. Yeah. It's going to be a critical favorite in 10 years after it gets canceled after the first season, because I'm assuming if you listen to this, you've seen the first season, and yeah, anyways.
Okay, well, and you were a fan of Louis C.K. prior to the show's existence, right?
I was not.
Oh, really?
Okay. I was not. I was not actually a very big fan of his comedy. I'd heard it, I think, when I was younger, and I didn't really follow him much since then. And I don't think I quite got it. Mm-hmm. I was also not hugely into stand-up comedy, period.
Okay.
At that point, the show was my first, like, major exposure to him, other than, I guess, Parks and Rec.
Okay, then what got you into watching the show?
It was on a site. Somebody had recommended it before the first episode, because they released a clip of the first scene. I don't think it's the first scene in the show, but it's where they're playing poker.
I'm pretty sure it's the first scene.
It's the first scene of either the first or the second episode.
Okay,
and they talk about his use of the word faggot, and it's the tone of it, that it was really it didn't shy away from a very sensitive issue, and it went back and forth from being sort of funny to being fairly serious, and it sounded like it had something to say without sucking the fun out of the half hour comedy format.
Okay. And I guess you said, you kind of summed it up a bit there, but in general, what is it about the show that you like about it? Like, that sort of keeps you watching it, I guess.
I think the biggest thing is the way that he plays with form, because it's not like, oh, it's on a set and we're just going to see sort of a semi-objective view of what's happening in this sort of narrative of this person's life. It was almost like little sketches, and they could go from being really surreal and funny to being really sad and I don't know. I mean, people call it a depressing show sometimes, but I never felt that about it. I can't quite describe it, but the tone of it, and the way that it sort of moves around, and the way that he plays with editing, and the way that he plays with reality in it, I thought was really, really interesting for a half-hour show.
Okay. Are there any specific examples where there was, like, an episode, you know, I assume it would be kind of early on when you started watching it, where you're like, oh, okay, this is kind of different. Yeah.
The drug episode, because of the way that it handled it, it didn't go into, like, a I don't know, like a 1960s sort of montage of psychedelic music. It was like things started slipping in and out of reality when he was at this fucking Sketchbags apartment and smoking with him. Like, oh, where'd that dog come from? There's a dog that shows up out of nowhere, and then there's a rabbit, and then the guy inexplicably throwing the water tank out the window onto a car. And the way that it really captured that feeling of if you're in a situation where you're maybe in over your head, or you've sort of lost control of things, and the panic that comes with that, I thought was really interesting.
Okay. I agree with pretty much everything you said so far, particularly about it being kind of a sketch show. I don't necessarily think it's always a comedic sketch show either. I think it's, a lot of these sort of scenes are very dramatic, and I think my favorite scenes in the episode always come back to, or in the show always come back to comedy, but the show doesn't feel that it needs to remain in the realm of comedy, I don't think.
Well, there's that episode where they go to visit, it's the kid's great-grandmother or something.
That's one of my favorite episodes.
I remember all that, but the fact that it starts out with like 10 minutes of him air guitaring a lot, or air drumming to The Who,
yeah,
in the car, and then it goes into this really serious episode about like old people and racism and then death and not really knowing your elders and just sort of the weirdness around that, and the way that so rapidly switched gears in the middle of the show.
Yeah. Well, yeah, that's sort of the first episode that I saw where I was like, oh, okay, this is awesome, because I don't think the first 10 minutes of that show is, or that episode is enjoyable to watch. It's just a guy in a car drumming, and I don't like Louis C.K. as much as a lot of people that watch this show do. I find him really interesting, and I always appreciate what he's been able to do on the show and how he's able to do these things. But I don't love him as a comedian, and I don't love him as an actor. I don't always love him as a writer, but like, and this first 10 minutes, it was all just sort of, it was reliant on you caring about him, which I don't always. And it just wasn't entertaining to me. But when Grandma drops the M-bomb, yeah, like just out of nowhere, I just laughed.
Yeah.
Like I had to pause it because I was just laughing so hard. And it's very rare for something to catch me off guard like that did. And that was sort of where I was like, oh, okay, sometimes the show just isn't going to be fun to watch, but or even enjoyable to watch, but then it'll just sort of catch you out of left field. And that's a lot of my favorite things are kind of like that, you know?
Yeah, I mean, one other thing that I found that I like about it, we saw him at Just for Laughs the other night. I went with Alex's roommate and some other friends of mine, and we saw him headlining the show, and he talked about embracing all types of human experience or human interaction, where he'll have these weird encounters with people that will have either different lessons or different, like, you get something out of it, even if it's like terror or disappointment or something.
Yeah,
he'll get something out of interacting with people, and I find that the show is like that, that it's always seems to be about his interactions with people with different perspectives, or crazy people, or scary people, or troubled people sometimes, and there's always something to be taken from that experience. And I'm interested to go back and rewatch the show with that sort of lens.
Mm-hmm. Do you find yourself identifying with the character, like the Louis character, often?
Yeah.
Or
yeah. Yeah. The bit, I don't know, I'm thinking of the drug episode and a few other ones where you're sort of in a situation where you're maybe in over your head, or you misread somebody. Mm-hmm. And you kind of can't, there's no easy way out. I mean, like, less so since I've been an adult, but they remind me of that sort of like, misfit teenager-y sort of feeling sorry, I'm kind of losing my train of thought here. I've edited this out. Where you sort of have lost control of a situation, or you've misread something, and you kind of how to cope with that, or how does that feel, or how do you process that panic that happens?
Mm-hmm.
I identify with that. The sort of passing out while eating ice cream thing, maybe a little bit less.
Yeah.
The single dad thing, maybe a little bit less.
I think there are a lot of things in the single dad things that I find really interesting, despite not having children and have no aspirations to do so. Like when he, I think one of my favorite moments in the show, in its entire run, I don't remember what episode it happens in, but him and his girls are just in a store, and one of his girls sees someone steal something and is trying to point it out, and then he's like, "No, don't do that." And I think that's such like this interesting ethical, just this ethical question, because it goes against what you would, you know, remove from that situation, teach your girls. And and I think that's just that moment, I think, is just so interesting to me, and kind of funny as well. And I really like it. And those are the things I really like about Louis, is that he doesn't shy away from giving different answers to questions. You know what I mean? And like that episode where his friend is clearly going to kill himself, that conversation, I like that
too.
A lot.
Yeah. Yeah.
Cause these are things you only ever see presented in one way. And even if the other way to look at it is kind of, I don't know, a bit more troubling to think about, it's worth thinking about, you know?
I think he tries to be this fictional version of him, tries to be a pragmatist a lot of the time, but he ends up kind of catching himself, examining, well, why would I say that? Like, why am I teaching my girls to maybe just keep their head down and be safe?
Yeah.
Is that the kind of, you know, if everybody does that, is that kind of the world I want to live in? Yeah.
And, you know, some episodes go more for comedy. Like, I think it's the first episode of like season two is the one where he thinks his sister comes over and she has to go to the hospital. It turns out it's just gas, and like the whole thing is just a build up to a fart joke. And the first half of the IKEA episode is just hysterically funny. The woman keeps breaking down in IKEA. And even the last episode of this season.
Oh my God. That was
Christmas.
Tough.
I think that's so funny.
That was fucking difficult to watch Parker Posey in that episode.
Oh, no. I'm talking about the part where he's wrapping his kids' gifts.
Oh,
like the actual Christmas
aspect. Yeah.
I think that was so funny. And I just watched that this morning, and I hadn't laughed that hard in a while. But
there was no point in that whole task that he thought maybe it's not worth it.
Yeah, exactly.
He was not going to stray.
And it was just the escalation of that I thought was so funny. But, you know, and even like you mentioned the Parker Posey aspect of that episode, it gets a little weirder and darker. And there are some episodes that are just almost fully abstract. Like there's a lot of, well, the dad episode is one I'm thinking of that is just a super abstract
episode
with his uncle Excelsior, played by F. Murray Abraham. And he gets like this rash. And
what's the club that he goes to?
I wish I could remember. I'll look it up.
Okay. You were asking me earlier about, I kind of want to change my answer here. You were asking me earlier about this sort of surreal, what was the first sort of moment where I felt it was something special? And I think it was a combination of the poker scene and when Chelsea Peretti runs away from the date into a helicopter. And I wasn't questioning it as it was happening. I was like, yeah, I know how that would feel pretty bad, because if somebody flees from that situation, they might as well be running to a helicopter. Like the desperation when she ran, I don't know. I feel like there are probably some girls that could identify with that.
Yeah. Well, I can identify with the running as well, you know? But no, I think it's a really interesting show, and it seems like the only show on TV where some of these things can happen, you know?
And I'm assuming you're using that to lead into talking about why that is, how effects is allowing that to happen.
Well, I guess it's hard to talk about the show without mentioning the way it's produced, and that it's kind of famously, or I guess anybody that knows the show knows how it's produced, just because it's sort of like comes hand in hand with it. Because the type of person that likes Louis is the type of person that knows behind
a rundown of that.
The type of person that knows Louis is the type of person that knows like behind the scenes aspect of TV shows that they like. But yeah, no, the show, I think each episode is made very cheaply. I think it's like $200,000 he gets or something. And that's what led to him doing so many things off the top. Like until the third season, he edited the show himself. And it's just sort of like he took this less money and wanted a less prime slot for the show to actually air. And the idea was to do these things to get away from having to take notes from the network and just sort of retaining this sort of autonomy, and he doesn't have to rent cameras because he owns two Red cameras, you know, and he's just sort of, he puts so much of his own money into the show, and that's sort of what allows him this creative freedom. And I think that's cool. Clearly, I mean, it's a hard thing to achieve. You have to be very successful somehow to be able to do this. He's never really had any sort of, like, he's...
Yeah, he talks about it like he presented the network with a show where there was no possibility for them to lose. They're not spending enough money. Like, you know, give it a year, give it a certain order of episodes. I think it was 16 or something in the first season. And they're not spending enough where they would lose, even if the show didn't make money back. There was not a huge amount that they spent on it. So, and his only condition was not taking notes. And like you said, it's kind of blown up into this huge critical favorite. Like, he's had crazy guest stars this last year. He's working with Woody Allen's editor. I can't imagine that the last string of episodes where he was auditioning for Late Night.
Yeah.
I can't imagine that that's far from some of the conversations he's probably had in the last year.
Yeah, exactly.
Maybe less David Lynch.
Yeah. No, I agree. I think he has really sort of become this figurehead for retaining autonomy in an industry that is very well known for taking away your autonomy in favor of money. And I think that's sort of turned him into a cult figure of sorts. And he's just sort of, I don't know, he's a comedian version of Robin Hood, kind of. He's just sort of like trying to take studios and the big companies out of the way, like even with how he's selling his tickets now on his own website.
Would you say that he's the heir to the Duplass throne?
I would absolutely not say that. But yeah, because there's many negative things, as I said, about Louis. I like Louis, whereas Duplass can get the fuck out of my face and stay there. But no, I think the show's interesting. I don't always love it. I don't always think it's funny, but I don't think that's always the point. And I appreciate that there is a show on television where I can almost never guess where it's going to go next. I can't really think of a show that to compare this to. And I think that's sort of... That alone is not enough to make it a very good television show, but it's a good start. And I think what he has with this the show that's totally unpredictable, that's a good start. And then he does good things with that unpredictability, and I like that. And I'm happy it continues to exist.
Yeah, my only concern after the third season is, I mean, how long can you sustain that type of creativity without either breaking down like Dave, a la Dave Chappelle, or without sort of falling prey to your own genius? Like, at what point at what point is he going to start to actually believe the hype? And I don't know. I imagine it would probably get pretty terrible after that.
Well, I don't know. I don't feel like he seems like the type of person that we have to worry about buying into his own hype. And he's also not going to have the Dave Chappelle breakdown, because the Dave Chappelle breakdown came when Dave Chappelle got crazy famous. And like, people would walk up to him at Disney World and say, "I'm Rick James, bitch," when he's with his kids. And that just won't happen for Louis C.K. because it's the show isn't big enough, you know? As much as we enjoy watching it and talking about it, a very small percentage of the TV watching audience has actually seen it or even knows it exists.
Is that why it only got a minisode?
No. I mean, we could have gone more in depth with the show, of course.
Yeah, I don't have any notes.
Exactly. Exactly. But, you know, it's good to talk about it in a broad sense as well, without having to, you know, break down every scene of the dad episode or anything, even though I really like it. But, yeah, no, we'll be back for season 4 next summer, and I look forward to it. So.
Cool.
Thank you for joining us on this minisode, Travis.
Thank you for having me on this minisode. This room that we record the minisodes in is much smaller. Everything, yes. The microphone is smaller, the laptop is smaller, everything has been scaled down for these minisodes.
Our knees are touching, like we're so close together. It's just all so crammed together in this mini room for the minisodes. I don't know why we don't record in the regular room. But anyways, thank you for joining us. Be sure to check back with our next podcast next week and check out our website, themcguffinmen.com, in the meantime. Thank you.